if you're going to create a new business, I want you to look at a limited liability company, an LLC, because you're going to get double the asset protection you get out of the LLC versus a corporation. And of course, the partnerships and the sole proprietorships, they don't give you any asset protection. In fact, they don't give you many tax advantages. So the corporation, the LLC, are your primary tax tools, and the LLC is double the asset protection. Yes, the LLC has the corporate shield, just like the regular corporations, the C or the S. And by the way, which is the better corporate shield, the C or the S? Which one gives you better asset protection? Better watch out. It's a trick question. The corporate shield is identical. Okay, which gives you better asset protection, an LLC or a corporation? If we're just talking about the corporate shield, which one's better? Trick question. The corporate shield is the same in the LLC as it is in the corporations. The catch is the LLC has a double side of asset protection. It protects the company from what happens to you. If you just have a corporation, you get sick, you get sued, you get divorced, whatever it is, your creditor, the guy who's suing you, is going to get your stock in your corporation. Once he has the stock in your corporation, he has got the corporation. He elects new officers and directors. He has all the assets of the company. It's his. I need to give you a little history of the LLC. The LLC is actually an old European entity. You've heard of the LTDs in Britain and the GmbHs in Germany. Those are companies with limited liability. Well, in 1977, Wyoming legislature got together and they decided, well, why don't we create something that kind of looks like one of these European things? And I'm going to say that it's a cross between a partnership and a corporation. And we're not going to get into the asset protection aspects of what happens there, but I do want to talk about the taxes. When they created the LLCs in Wyoming, 1977, they went to the IRS and said, okay, Mr. IRS, how do we tax one of these animals? And when they got subchapter S of the IRS code, that changed taxation for little business owners who used corporations versus the C corporation. And we actually kind of expected them to come up with a subchapter Z or something of the IRS code to tax the LLC. Well, it took nearly 20 years. And finally, the IRS came back and said, gee, we don't care how you tax this. You check the box on the form. You tell us how you want to tax it. So you can have your LLC taxed as a sole proprietorship, as a partnership, as a corporation, S-Corp, C-Corp, doesn't matter. Now, I want to make a point here. Everybody pay attention. Now, LLCs have become very uniform over the last few years. We have the Uniform LLC Act of 2006. Court cases are coming down all the time, and they're beginning to affect whether you want a member-managed or a manager-managed LLC, whether you want a single-member LLC or a multiple-member LLC. In many states, you get different asset protection depending upon how you structure the LLC, how many members you have, and that sort of thing. But the point I wanted to make was the taxation. It doesn't matter how it's taxed. Now listen up. An LLC can be taxed as a sole proprietorship. It can be taxed as a C corporation, an S corporation, partnership. Doesn't matter. The asset protection of the LLC is the same. An LLC is an LLC. It doesn't matter what eyes the IRS is looking at it with when you're talking about asset protection. Now, if you're talking about taxes, of course it makes a difference as to how the thing is taxed. The taxation is going to be determined by what you write in the operating agreement. And a lot of you don't even have an operating agreement. If you do have one, you need to get it out and read it. It's not just a piece of paper. It determines what asset protection you get. It determines your taxation, which tax advantages you can take advantage of. You're probably going to tax your LLC as either a general partnership if you've got two or more members, or as a sole proprietorship if you're only one guy, or as an S corporation. It depends upon how you make your money And by the way, a single member can have his LLC taxed as an S corporation. You don't need a bunch of people. Just one guy will do it. And remember, it has nothing to do with asset protection, just tax. If you're a single guy and you're having it taxed as a sole proprietorship, that's basically what we call a disregarded entity. The IRS doesn't even want to know this thing exists. They just want you to fill out a Schedule C and file it with your 1040 form. I had a lady call me up this week, as a matter of fact, and she said, I've got my single member LLC. I'm going to have it taxed as a sole proprietorship. It's a disregarded entity, right? You use my Social Security number, right? And I said, yeah. And she says, well, my bank says I have to have a tax ID number. And I said, no, not for a sole proprietorship or a disregarded entity, LLC. You use your Social Security number. Yeah, but the bank won't give me a checking account until I give them a tax ID number. And finally, I said, well, lady, get another bank. The sole proprietorship taxation of an LLC is disregarded. IRS ignores it. General partnership, S-Corp, two or more individuals in the general partnership, S-Corp, all you have to do is make the election. Now, I said a minute ago, your choice of taxation is going to depend upon how you make your money. If your money is being made in a passive format, you get rents, royalties, whatever, then you probably want it just taxed as either a sole proprietorship or as the general partnership. If you are getting earned income, that's the primary source of income for your LLC. You make a widget and you sell it. You perform a service. You get paid, whatever. If you've got earned income, then you probably want it taxed as an S corporation. Oh, and by the way, we talked about membership, owner of the LLC. Who's the owner of your LLC? Well, it needs to be your living revocable trust. Because I don't want to have to probate your company when you die. Your family doesn't want to have to do it either, trust me. The way you prevent the probate is you have your living revocable trust own your membership interest. Now, I'm going to put in a little caveat here. If you are having it taxed as an S corporation, your LLC, then you need a special type of living revocable trust that qualifies to own subchapter S stock. You have to know what needs to be done and direct the attorneys and the accountants to do it for you. Oh, and one more little caveat. On the EIN number, the employer identification number, the bank wanted the lady to get one of those. You don't need it if you're a disregarded entity, but do not get your EIN number until you have to, until you're going to make money, until you're going to pay money. Because as soon as you get the EIN number, the funny thing is the IRS figures that you should be filing taxes. And the IRS has this cute little rule. Even if you don't make any money, you have no activity in your LLC. Why file taxes? I didn't make any money. Well, the IRS says you'd better file your taxes, and they will penalize you $135 per month per member of an LLC that doesn't file its taxes. So the clock starts when you're supposed to file your taxes, and the penalties run until you actually do file your taxes. You've got three or four members, you don't file for a year or two, that's a big penalty, guys. Don't get your EIN number until you have to. And then definitely file your taxes. If you've already got an LLC or a corporation, say you've got a corporation that's taxed as a C corp, or you've got an LLC that's taxed as a partnership, and you want to change to an S corporation tax filing status, you can do that. It's an accounting question. It's not a lawyer question. If you've got assets and stuff in the company, it may be a nightmare tax-wise. There are lots of hidden tax traps. You file with the IRS at the first of the year, and you request the change. But don't forget to figure out what the tax consequences are. Sometimes it's a lot easier to just start a new company. And I would have an LLC taxed as an S-Corp That would be my knee-jerk reaction. There are reasons to have a taxation status as a C corporation, but generally you're going to want an S corp. Let me give you some tax tips now. Let's look at this one. I'm going to assume that you've got an S corporation taxation structure, all right? That means it's a pass-through entity. Whatever the company makes passes through to the individual owners, the members, or the stockholders, and it is taxed in their taxes. If it's passive income, it will pass through the company. You won't be charged the social taxes, FICA, FUTA, Social Security, Medical, all of that sort of stuff. However, if it's earned income, then everything is subject to these social taxes, as I call them, and it takes about 13% of your wage in order to pay those social taxes. So in an S corporation, what you do is you take a reasonable salary, and you'll note that there's an article in the materials that you have on what's a reasonable salary. But basically, it's a salary that would be reasonable for someone performing the services that you have performed in the area where you are performing these services. So you take a reasonable salary. Let's say your company makes $100,000 a year, and you take a salary of $50,000. You're a plumber. $50,000 for a plumber is not bad in your area. But that leaves another $50,000 in the company, which you did not take as salary. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to pay that out, not as salary, but as a distribution. Same thing as a dividend in a C corporation, except it's not taxed, no double taxation. So you distribute the extra $50,000. On that $50,000, you save all of the social taxes. You basically are saving 13% of the $50,000. You just made an extra $6,000-some-odd out of this deal. Did you work any harder to get that extra $6,000? No. Did you make any funny investments? Take any big risks? No. We just moved your money differently through the legal system. That's the only thing we did there, and we got you an extra $6,000. Look at the example I've got for you in the supporting materials. We've got an example there that shows $120,000 coming into your little business. You pay a salary of $50,000. You take $70,000 as a distribution. You end up with an extra $7,000 plus in your pocket at the end of the year. These are good numbers, guys. Take a look at it. Now, your accountant is going to look at this and he's going to say, yep, that's absolutely right, but gee, you got to take a reasonable salary and you might get audited. Well, okay, you might get audited. That's not the end of the world if you've done everything right. Look at the IRS's reasonable salary standards. They're in the written materials that I have for you, and sit down and figure out, okay, what's reasonable in my case. Then make your distributions. In the written materials, you're going to notice that there are a couple of caveats when you make your distributions, but it's no big deal. This is something that you should be doing. If you're not doing, start doing it. Can you see how you can make the extra $6,000 this year? Now, you may be distributing more or less. It doesn't matter, but you're making 13%-ish, 14, whatever it is. You're making an extra percentage on whatever you pay out as a distribution. You just made more money. Let's look at another tax tip. I like this one. This is tax-free income. And trust me, guys, tax-free is a lot better than tax-deductible or anything else. When you have your little business, you're going to have the occasion to travel. Figure out an occasion to travel. I don't know how you're going to travel in your little business. Go visit associates. I mean, Sarah Palin took per diem when she stayed at her house up in Wasilla, and she wasn't in Juneau, the state capital, where she was governor. She went home. She took per diem in her own house. And by the way, per diem means for the day. I have a good friend who writes books for people who collect rocks. Well, he calls them gemstones, all right. This man travels around the world. He's been to Russia. He's been on the cruises. He's been everywhere else. Everywhere he goes, he takes pictures of gems. He goes to the rock shops, he goes to the rock stores, the jewelry stores. He takes pictures of the gems, and he actually uses those pictures in his books. He doesn't make a ton of money off the books, but he makes some money. He writes off all of his travel. When you travel, particularly in the United States, you should take what's called the per diem. For years, I traveled, and I have a nice little envelope for every one of the trips that I take, and I can tell you the business purpose. I can tell you how much money I made on the trip. I can tell you everything about the trip. I had all the McDonald's receipts. I have the hotel receipts. I have the taxi receipts. I have everything in these envelopes. Well, I get audited. Routinely, I get audited. They roll in. They come in with a supervisor and an auditor. There's always two of them. And they take over the conference room for a week. The last time they did it, the reason that they said that they were auditing was I had too much in travel expenses. Well, I explained to the guy what I did, and I showed him my envelopes, and he looked at three or four of the envelopes and synced up the envelopes with what I'd taken off as my travel expenses. And finally, the guy looked at me and he said, "Why don't you just take the government per diem?" So what's per diem? Well, let me walk you through it. Type in per diem on the internet, P-E-R-D-I-E-M, per diem. Then go to the GSA site, the Government Services Administration site. You're going to see a map. Okay, click on the map. Which state are you going to travel to? Click on the state where you're traveling. Let's say you're traveling to Florida. Okay, it's going to bring up Florida. You'll note that all of the cities are listed. And then there's a lodging expense. There's different expense in some places for different months. So they list it all out in specific months. Then there's a meal and entertainment expense column. Well, you'll note that you're going to get somewhere between $55 and $75, depending upon which city you're in, for the food in that city. That's how much you can take off in a day for food in that city. Now, you don't need any receipts. You don't have to pay that amount. If you eat at McDonald's and you don't eat that amount, that's fine. The government says you take that amount off. No questions asked. That's what you get. If you eat more than that, of course, you'd better have the receipts and show that you ate more than that. On your rooms, if you stay in a cheap hotel, you can take off what the government says you can take off. If you stay in an expensive hotel, then get the receipt and you can take off the actual amount. The catch is, I go on my trip and I eat at McDonald's. And I actually do eat at McDonald's a lot. But it doesn't matter where I eat. I automatically take off the $65 or whatever it is that the government says that I can take off. If I didn't spend that much, then that's okay. I still take off that much. Now, what happens? I submit the request for the per diem to my company. My company then pays me the $65. I don't report it as income. It's an expense to my company. So if I only spent $20 on McDonald's that day, and I had a $65 expense per diem, then I've taken $45 out of my company, paid it to myself, the company got a tax deduction, it was tax-free income to me. So I've gotten money out of my company tax-free. Now, I travel a lot, and I took the auditor's advice. The fact of the matter is, I am making thousands of dollars tax-free out of my company every year by taking the per diem. So, the per diem becomes a way that you can get money out of your company tax-free. You may be only taking $400 or $500 a year out of the company tax-free, but that adds up over the years. And remember what tax-free growth was? Dollar double 20 times, million 48. Versus the tax stuff, $12,089, is it worth getting $500 out tax-free? That's not just $500. That's a lot more to you in the long run if you consider the time value of that money and everything else. It's a big deal. Let's look at another tax tip, and this is a bonus one too because you get tax-free income. This is section 280AG. Yeah, it's an IRS code section, which means it's pretty much in black and white. You can go to your materials and see the entire 280AG printed out there. The one we're interested in is G under A. Basically, that means it's at the bottom. It says special rule for certain rental use. Notwithstanding any other provision of this section or section 183, if a dwelling unit is used during the taxable year by the taxpayer as a residence, and such dwelling is actually rented for less than 15 days during the taxable year, then, 1, no deduction otherwise allowable under this chapter because of the rental use of such dwelling unit shall be allowed. So everything else is gone. And here's the good part, the income derived from such use for the taxable year shall not be included in the gross income of the taxpayer under Section 61. Now, let's go back and look at this for just a second. What's a dwelling unit used by the taxpayer as a residence? Well, that's your house. It doesn't have to be your principal residence. It could be a second home, summer vacation home, beach house. I don't know. Technically, a residence is defined as anywhere that you can cook and sleep. Can you cook and sleep in a motorhome? How about a boat? So you've got some place that you can cook and sleep, and you're going to rent this for less than 15 days a year. How many days during the year can you rent it? 14, 2 weeks. You rent it 15, you toast. But if you only rent it for 14, any income that you receive for the rental of that residence is taxed. Free. It doesn't go into your AGI, adjusted gross income. You don't report it. It's just not reported. Not 1099, not nothing. Let me give you a little history of this law. In High Point, North Carolina, there's a big convention held every year. It's the furniture market. All of the furniture manufacturers get together and they have a big show. For years, High Point, North Carolina was the big show. There aren't that many hotels in High Point, North Carolina. Hundreds of thousands of people converge on High Point, North Carolina. Where are you going to house them? So the representatives, the congressmen from North Carolina got together and passed a law which said, okay, rent your house for no more than 14 days, and any rent that you get is tax-free. Does that encourage people in High Point, North Carolina to rent their house to all of these people who come for the furniture market? Of course it does. Actually, technically, they still have it in High Point, North Carolina, but the big one is in Vegas, and they take all of Las Vegas up for this furniture show. But the law still exists, and it still applies to you. So here's what you do. When you go on vacation, you put an ad in the newspaper, or on Craigslist, or whatever it is, and you rent your house while you're gone on vacation. And then any income that you get is tax-free. And you just said, Phillips, you're nuts. I'm not renting my house out for 2 weeks to some idiot while I go on vacation. I come home, the place is going to be trashed. Okay, I'll give you that. So here's what you do. You're in business. I don't know. You're a doctor. You have a little business. I have a business. And in my business, I associate with people all over the United States. My colleagues. Well, when my colleagues come to visit me, what I do is I make sure that they stay at my house, not the local hotel, and I entertain them, I feed them, I take good care of them. And actually, I have a place on the number one beach in the United States. Yes, it is on the number one beach in the United States, and yes, it is a residence. And I have people come visit me there all the time, and we talk business. Actually, I do a lot of business there. So, what I do is I charge these people $2,000 a day for me to feed them, to room them, everything else, conference, everything. And they willingly pay that, right? I don't think so. But I do have colleagues in, and I do rent out the beach house while they are there. Who pays the rent? My company pays the rent. This is a company expense. I am entertaining a colleague, and I can point to a lot of business that has come from the visits that people have paid me at my beach house. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of business. So when my company pays $2,000 a day for my house on the beach, it's an expense to the company, Now 280AG says that comes to me tax-free. So let's see, 14 times 2 is $28,000. I take $28,000 a year out of my company tax-free. Now the question is, how much rent can I charge? Is $2,000 a day reasonable? Well, the Ritz Hotel, which is just down the street on the beach, they charge about $1,000 a day for the room. Now, there's no conference room, there's no foods, there's no eats, there's no nothing, just $1,000 a day for the room at the Ritz. By the way, my house is nice, and you get all of the food, you get the conference facility, you get everything that a businessman could want in order to entertain a guest. If you went down and asked the Ritz what it would cost them to rent one of their conference rooms for the day, you're easy in at $2,000 for the lodging and the conference room. Plus, you don't get the company. But can you see what just happened? Maybe you don't have colleagues come. Maybe you just have your office personnel. I said you were a doctor, okay? You've got your nurses and you've got your accounting people and all of that sort of stuff. So, 3 or 4 times a year, I think you should have a retreat at your house. It could even be on a Saturday. And all of your employees should come and you should discuss your business. You should feed them a nice barbecue for lunch. Well, no, let's just do the salad stuff for lunch and let's do the nice barbecue for dinner. So, you go down to your local nice hotel and you find out what it is to rent a conference room for a day and to feed lunch and a nice barbecue dinner. That's what you charge your company for renting your residence for this retreat. But you got to remember, it's a deduction to the company and it's tax-free to you. Your accountant may have never heard of this, but he's certainly going to read the tax code and figure out, yep, it's there in black and white, boys. He can do all the research he wants. The only thing he's going to say is, hey, you got to take a reasonable amount for the rent. Okay, take a reasonable rent. But if you're reasonable, the IRS is never going to question it. In fact, it isn't even going to increase your audit risk because it's something that's not reported. The big movie stars, they rent their houses for $250,000 a day, and they do an infomercial or they do part of a movie or something in the house. So do you think that you could shoot your next YouTube video in the house and spend the day and advertise for your business with this video? And charge the company for renting the residence to shoot the video? I think so. This is cool stuff, guys. Now, how many residences can you have? Well, I have my residence on the beach, number one beach in the United States. I also have a residence very near the number one ski resort in the United States. So would you think that it might be possible for me to have colleagues come in and go skiing? And certainly we're going to do business. I'm going to house them. I'm going to feed them. I'm going to take very good care of them. And my business is going to rent not only the house on the beach, but the house by the ski resort too. There is no limit as to how many residences you can have in a year and have them qualify for rentals under 280AG. Can you see that there are two sets of laws, one the rich people use and one that everybody else uses? Anybody can use the rich set of laws, they just don't know about them. Let's go on. The next tax tip. Hey, the kids are going to love this one. The guy is going to look at you and say, huh? You want a what? I want a Section 408 trust. If your advisor doesn't know what a Section 408 trust is, it's time to get a new advisor. Because the laws associated with Section 408 allow you to do all kinds of things. A Section 408 trust is something that you know as an IRA. An IRA is a really neat thing. And if it's a Roth IRA, that's a really neat thing because her tax is going to go up or her tax is going to go down. Well, which one's better, a Roth IRA or a regular IRA? Let's look at it. Look at the chart in the materials. We're going to assume that you've got a 25% tax bracket and you can put your $5,000 into an IRA. Well, if it's a traditional IRA, it goes in, you get a tax deduction, so you've really got $5,000 that you can put into your IRA. If it's a Roth IRA, though, you've got to pay the tax. So you don't have a full $5,000 to stick into the IRA. You've only got $3,750. Well, just for fun, we're going to assume a 10% growth rate on this. We're just using round numbers here, all right? So if I have a 10% growth rate and I grow both the standard IRA and the Roth IRA for 20 years, in the standard IRA, I've got more money because I had more money growing, $30,580. In the Roth IRA, I don't have as much because I didn't start with as much. I've only got $22,935. Ah, yes, but when I take the money out of the standard IRA, I have to pay tax on it. So when I pay tax on the money out of the standard IRA, I end up with a grand total of $22,935. The funny thing is, that's the exact same amount that I can take out of my Roth. When I take it out of my Roth, there's no tax. So I get $22,935. Same number. There's an assumption here, though, that's wrong. What is it? You're assuming that the tax rate was 25% when you put the money in, and it's 25% when you take the money out. Well, from our history chart, we know that taxes are probably going to be going up. So that makes the Roth IRA extremely valuable to you. The tax tip is use a Roth IRA. Actually, that's not the total tax tip. By the way, start a Roth IRA for your kids. Because even if you only have a little bit of money in your IRA, we can do lots of interesting things with it. You can invest in real estate. You can invest in businesses. You can invest in all sorts of stuff other than the standard mutual funds that your financial guy is going to line you up with. And if I've got a child and I've got $5,000 in that Roth IRA during his lifetime, I can make a lot of money for him.